Do you swear on the Constitution of the United States to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
This is Police Radio,
the voice of American law enforcement,
with your host, Randy Sutton.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. We're on the America Out Loud Network. Thanks so much for joining me. I am Randy Sutton, your host. We're going to have a great show today. I'm going to give you my view from the blue. And then we've got a great guest that's going to talk about some major inroads for law enforcement officers in the state of Texas. But before we do, I want to do a shout out to those who make this show happen. And that is BlueLivesMatter.blue, which is the official news and information website for Blue Lives Matter. That is where you want to go for all of your news and information about everything that's going on in the law enforcement community, BlueLivesMatter.blue. Also, Warrior12.com. Warrior12.com has the most incredible selection of t-shirts and Blue Lives Matter gear, including cups and all kinds of crazy stuff. And you're going to get a chance to win an entire product line, and I'm going to tell you about that just a few minutes. So that's Warrior12.com. And of course, JSD Protective Services, which is the 21st century security company with all your security needs all over the nation. JSD Protective Services. I've got an incredible offer for you. It's a fantastic promotion for Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. We want you to have the opportunity to win $500 worth of gear from Warrior12.com. Now, Warrior12.com has the entire Blue Lives Matter product line. All right, that's every cool t-shirt you can imagine. And then there's cups, and there's mugs, and there's paracord bracelets. There's all kinds of stuff. You can see it all at Warrior12.com. But you can win it now. You can win every single item on there simply by going to BlueLivesRadio.com and entering. That's it. That's all you got to do. And this promotion is going to take place just within this month. So there's a really good shot of winning this. So all you have to do to win $500 worth of very cool Blue Lives gear is go to BlueLivesRadio.com and enter for free. Now tell your friends about it too, because we want as many people as possible getting the opportunity to get all of this cool gear. And I want you to tell your friends about Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. So, fantastic promotion, BlueLivesMatter.com, and enter to win for free. Let's take a walk into the briefing room where I'm going to give you my view from the blue.
The Briefing Room. Headlines, stories, and all that touches American law enforcement.
Some of you might know that I originally hail from the great state of New Jersey, where I was a police officer for 10 years before leaving there and joining the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. So I grew up in the state of New Jersey, and I was a cop there in a small town, the small town of Princeton, which was a very educated community. And education is what we're going to talk about right now, because the state of New Jersey is doing something that I got to say I actually think is smart for a change. And that is that they have passed a bill, and there's a big debate about this proposed new class, but the subject matter is how to interact with police officers. And a bill was passed by a black assemblywoman that teaches children how to interact with cops from the ages of when they get into kindergarten and going all the way through high school. Now, I for one see this as a real positive, and the idea behind it is probably to teach kids something that they're not getting at home, and that is, how do you interact with a police officer? I think that this not only might have a chance to potentially save lives, but it will also give people, not only the kids, but police officers, an opening dialogue, and it will put more cops in the school because they will be used as subject matter experts, and it'll open dialogue. I cannot see anything negative in this. So this black female assemblywoman in New Jersey creates this bill. It passes unanimously. And this is only a couple weeks ago, the end of June. And would you believe it that suddenly there are protests about this? Uh-huh, that's right. And guess who's protesting? If you guessed Black Lives Matter, you would get the prize. Because, yep, that's who is protesting. You know, some people, they call themselves activists, came out and said, this is blaming the victims. Now, the victims of what? The victims of what? What they're saying is that children are already being victimized by the police. And simply by opening a dialogue and teaching a curriculum in how to interact with the police is somehow a negative. But it gets even worse than that. Now they're accusing this as being a racist-motivated curriculum. How in God's name can a protest come out against that which is proposed by a black assemblywoman claiming that her proposal is going to be racist? It boggles the mind. And once again, what it says is that the personal, professional, social narrative of this group, Black Lives Matter, and other activists, quote unquote, isn't to bring people together. It isn't to open a dialogue and to bring some light onto a subject that should be talked about and should be educated. It is only to divide. It is only to create a more hostile environment for children and for the police. How else can people be educated if they don't get input from others? That's what education is. And finally, the state of New Jersey does something that I think is intelligent. Instead of the governor sitting on the beach that he had closed, they're doing something that might make a difference in the lives of people. So I, for one, am all for this curriculum. It hasn't been signed into law yet, but it was unanimously voted as a go by the New Jersey Assembly. And now it has to, you know, take the next steps, whatever that is. But will it, now that there are protests? Because, you know, you can't find a more politically correct state than New Jersey, well, other than California and maybe Oregon, that they will bow to pressure. And this is what really kind of frightens me, is that here's a positive. And will the state be cowed by the politically correct members of who are very loudmouthed of the communities that are out there carrying signs and chanting about how this is racist? You know, they're not just teaching black kids how to interact with the police. They're not just, you know, teaching Hispanic kids or Asian kids or just white kids. They're teaching all children. How anyone could believe that there's a racist agenda here is just simply beyond me. And I think what it really does is it shows what the movement Black Lives Matter is really all about. And that's keeping the intolerance, keeping the divisiveness and division in this country going to further their own social agendas. And that is one of my views from the blue. Now, something else came up just a few days ago. And I am so disturbed by this. As you know, approximately 1 year ago now, we had one of the deadliest days in law enforcement history. When members of the Dallas Police Department were confronted by a suspect armed with a high-powered rifle who killed a number of these officers, six officers, wounded more, and went on a rampage that lasted an incredible amount of time. He did horrendous damage. He took the lives of these men and women who were doing nothing except helping to monitor other protests against them. And what happens? They are attacked by this heavily armed suspect who was eventually cornered and then killed in such a way that has never been done by law enforcement before, and that is the police department sent in a robot armed with high explosives who then detonated and thereby took out the suspect. And they were criticized for doing that by some parties, but clearly this was a death that needed to happen, and they took this guy out in the safest way possible. So why am I disturbed? Other than the fact that these officers lost their lives, because it just came out that the police department, the Dallas Police Department, ordered these officers, or at least some of these officers who were equipped with heavy gear, heavy protective gear, they were ordered not to wear it. Yeah, you heard me right. They were ordered not to wear their heavy protective gear during this protest. Now, let's talk about the history of these Black Lives Matter protests and how violent they have been. We've seen riots in Ferguson. We've seen riots in Baltimore. 71 police officers were injured in Baltimore, who, by the way, were ordered by their police department not to wear their protective gear, to leave it in the cars. And what happens? The same thing happens in Dallas. And what happens as a result of that? The deaths of police officers. I have contacted the head of the police union in Dallas, and I'm waiting to hear back, but I did get confirmed by other union members that this has been found to be true, that it's no longer a rumor, that they have verified that supervisors were giving orders not to wear the heavy protective gear. Now, here's the question. Where did those orders come from? Did they come from the top? Did they come from the police chief? Or did it make its way down through other police supervisors? One thing is for sure. There needs to be a major investigation conducted by the state's attorney or even possibly the Department of Justice. Because if in fact police supervisors gave an order like that, they might have blood on their hands. We don't know which of the officers that were killed had the access to this gear and then were not allowed to wear that. That information has not come out yet, and that needs to come out. Because if one of these officers, even one, wanted to use that heavy protective gear and was ordered not to, and whoever that supervisor is or whoever that administrator is that made that decision should be charged criminally. Yeah, you heard me right. They should be charged criminally because that action, that order, led to the death of a police officer. This is what needs to be discovered. This is what needs to be investigated. And there needs to be a full-scale investigation, not an internal affairs investigation, which might be covered up in order to protect members of the supervisory class of officers, but needs to be done by a other body that is not connected with the police department. So I am going to try and continue my efforts in getting the head of the Dallas Police Association onto this show where we can talk about this in much greater detail. But in the meantime, it has been verified through other sources that this did in fact take place, that police officers of the Dallas Police Department were ordered during a civil unrest situation not to wear their heavy protective gear. This should be a criminal matter, a criminal investigation. And that, my friends, is my view from the blue for this week. Now let's take a walk into the interview room, where we're going to talk to my guest from the Texas Municipal Police Officers Association, Mitch Landry.
We are one of the fastest growing podcast and talk radio networks in the world. You're listening to the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. It's where we say, let the silent voices be heard. And we stand proudly with the men and women who serve in our armed forces and our law enforcement heroes. Thank you for being part of our family. And we'll see you back at AmericaOutLoud.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Welcome to the interview room at Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. With me today is Mitch Landry. Mitch is he first became involved with the Texas Municipal Police Officers Association, which, by the way, is the largest police union in Texas. He served on their board of directors from 91 to 2001. He was elected TMPA president, served in that capacity for a year, and then was hired by the TMPA in the May of 2001. He's been deputy executive director since 2008. Before that, he served with the San Angelo Police Department, and his assignments included patrol, criminal investigations, and narcotics. And I want to say thank you, Mitch. Thanks for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Appreciate it, Randy. Good to talk to you.
It's always a pleasure. It's always a pleasure. You know, there has been a lot of activity in Texas and some really good stuff that that you have assisted in getting on legislatively. And I think that our listeners, both police officers and their supporters, are going to be really interested in the amazing inroads that your union has made. So first of all, you know, Texas suffered such devastating news when the killings of the police officers in Dallas and elsewhere, but especially in Dallas, about a year or so ago. And I think that probably is what helped spur on some of the dramatic efforts that you guys have made. Is that not correct?
That's correct. You know, in fact, it's coming up on the year anniversary, July 7th, this coming Friday. I'll actually be in Dallas with the governor. He's actually going to sign a bill, the Police Officers Protection Act, which basically moved the killing of a police officer or law enforcement personnel into the hate crime statute. So, you know, that's one of the things that came out of that unfortunate tragedy a year ago. But then from that, some other favorable things for law enforcement. And so it has turned out to be a pretty good session for us this last year as far as law enforcement.
Now, your assignment or your job with the Texas Municipal Police Officers Association, by the way, how many members do you guys have?
We have just over 26,000 members statewide. And like you said, we are the largest association in Texas. And my primary duties are governmental affairs, working with the legislature.
So your union represents police officers from all over the state, not just...
Yeah, not just municipal officers either. We've been around since 1950, and of course, when we were founded in 1950, it was all municipal officers. But we have sheriff's deputies, DPS troopers, constables, you name it. We have a vast array of officers from across the state.
Okay, that's great. So let's talk about some of these laws that have been, they've actually been signed into law. Is that not true?
That's correct. The ones I sent you dealing with, workers' comp and those type issues, they've all been signed into law and will take effect September 1st of this year.
Okay, and these are some amazing laws. Now, let's talk just a little bit historically for my listeners. And one of the greatest tragedies in law enforcement is that many times that police officers are injured in the line of duty, and both physically and also emotionally, psychologically, through post-traumatic stress disorder, oftentimes the police agencies and the municipalities or cities that they serve have basically treated them very poorly, and in some cases, in fact, in many cases, have actually tossed them aside and fired them or not given them benefits that they should have received. So when your union went to look at this and examine it, what did you find, and what did you guys do about it?
Well, one of the first things, you mentioned PTSD, and we found, I think law enforcement ourselves, we refused, I think Randy over, especially up through the 90s, the 2000s, we've always, kind of pushed PTSD to the side, even ourselves. But, I think in the last 10 or 15 years, we've really done a good job to really recognize that that is a problem, and it's a problem within law enforcement. As you know, we have a great number in law enforcement that are also served in the military, so that kind of compounds the situation. So one of the things we looked at in Texas was under workers' comp, PTSD was not recognized as a diagnosis. So you would have an officer maybe had a physical injury that would be covered, but when it came to the mental health side of it, the cities and counties, there was no assistance there. And so that was very problematic. And so that was one of the first things we want to look at this session, is to see if we could get PTSD into workers' comp and make it covered. And Representative Ray, that's out of the Ennis area by Dallas, he filed the legislation. And I was actually kind of surprised, because we did have some pushback, of course, from the workers' comp carriers. But it was well received in both the House and the Senate, and it was, it passed and has been signed by the governor. So that's a very significant part of change to workers' comp in Texas.
This is something that I think should be made statutory in every single state, because your state is now one of very few that actually do recognize post-traumatic stress disorder as a workers' compensation injury. And this is going to have a tremendous effect on law enforcement all over your state. And I wish I could say that every other state was adopting it, but every other state needs to adopt it.
Absolutely. One of the things that we would talk to legislators about is, your physical health is important, but even more important, in my opinion, is your mental health. Because your mental health controls your physical health, and so if you don't have that, both combinations going on, bad things are going to happen. And just us personally, we, before the session started in January, over the holidays, we actually had two TMPA members, that took their own lives. And, suicide's something that we don't want to talk about, but it's part of it, and that's the PTSD. So, just going in prior to going into session within a month, we had two examples there of, tragedies that happen when you don't take care of your mental health.
Oh, it's horrible. And I know that nationally we've been seeing some really dramatic suicides by law enforcement officers, even on duty, or going in off duty and putting their uniforms on. I think we had six within a period of like 2 weeks. And this does show a tremendous effort now on the part of your organization and the state of Texas to recognize the strain and how PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, can can truly affect law enforcement officers. How do they? How is it going to work mechanically? So, if I'm a member of the Dallas Police Department, and let's take a small agency, and I think that I'm having issues that I need to talk to someone about. What do they do then? Do they go to their police chief, or how does it work?
They would go to their human resources and, just basically like you would for a physical injury and say, I think I'm having some issues with PTSD or whatever, and I need to seek these, counseling or whatever. And kind of tying into that same bill, Randy, we had another bill passed that did two things. You talk about the small agencies. I think we all agree that, your mid to larger size agencies, whether it's around the state of Texas or around the country, generally do a pretty good job on debriefing after critical incidents, et cetera. But, the smaller agencies, they don't have the resources. So we have another bill passed by Representative Giddings, and then we had Representative Davis's bill amended onto it, and it does two things. It is actually going to set up funds out of the governor's office for two things. The first will be for any agency in the state of Texas that has, officers that need counseling, whatever it may be. The agencies then can apply for the funds from the governor's office, and those funds will pay for that counseling. So your cities and counties will not be on the hook for those expenses. And secondly, in that bill is critical incident debriefing. Again, larger agencies, I think they do a very, very good job. If they have a critical incident, they can, whether it's a SWAT team or a couple of individuals that can bring them in, debrief them, get them counseling or whatever. But the second part of this bill is also going to designate funds in the governor's office so that any critical incident in the state of Texas, again, the agency can apply for the funds to have a debriefing and the mental health services for all the officers involved.
That's really cutting edge stuff. I don't think I've heard of another state doing that. Was there one specific incident that took place? Was it the massacre in Dallas that was the impetus for legislation like this?
I don't think it is. It's been workers' comp in Texas is, we've said for years, it's a broken system. So it's one thing that we've been just working on, trying every session, how can we address problems? And I give you an example. In the last bill I just talked about on the mental health funding from the governor's office, that came out of a conversation at lunch with a chief of staff for Representative Davis way back last summer. And the conversation was just, she was like, what's going on in law enforcement? What are some of the things that we could help with? And I gave her these examples of just talking about critical incidents and how we've had officers involved in a critical incident, and their supervisor is like, okay, you did the walkthrough, now you need to go back and hit the streets. Believe it or not, that's happened.
That's
and
crazy.
It's crazy. So we talked about, again, how the larger agencies have those services, but the vast majority don't. And so her office called me back probably in October and said, hey, come by and look at what we've come up with. And they actually came up with it, which I was very impressed with on the critical incident stuff. And so it just kind of worked from there. And so we really attacked workers' comp this session. And, that's just two of the bills. We were also another bill that we had passed is that the workers' comp now in Texas is going to have a designated liaison for first responders. In other words, first responder gets injured or whatever, they will have a liaison with the workers' comp that works with them. That way they're not having to stand in line. They're going to be first up and going to have assistance of how to work that, how to, work through the workers' comp.
That is absolutely I love that because, we have seen agencies around the country where a police officer gets hurt in the line of duty, and it may be a very serious injury or a fall kind of item, but they are being denied the workers' comp services. simply because they're trying to save money. So to have a liaison is tremendous.
It is. You know, I used an example. I actually have a friend works for San Angelo Police Department who was chasing a suspect back in July last year, and fell in a hole, sprained his ankle very badly. In working that, you know, workers' comp now is like, well, let's see if it heals next week. They wouldn't do the MRI or CAT scan, whatever they needed to do. A month later in August, they finally did the scan, and what they found was, yes, it's broken, but the bad news is it started growing back together already, so now they have to do surgery. So instead of doing it up front in the 1st of July, doing what you need to do, he'd probably been off work 6 to 8 weeks maybe, he finally was able to go back to work the middle of January. So he was off from July to January just due to the fact of how
that's negligence
works.
Is what that is.
It's crazy. But that's not only happening to first responders, workers' comp, it's happening to everyone. You know, that's kind of the nature of the beast. So that's why we're real proud of, you know, what we've seen get enacted here in the state. Another separate bill, that we've been working on for a while is it's going to form a work group of all the stakeholders. It'll have representatives from firefighters, law enforcement, EMS, all your first responders. And their challenge is going to be to go in and study workers' comp and make recommendations to make changes. And I think, you know, the other bills are good, but I think that in itself, being passed and saying, hey, we're going to concentrate and see how we can repair a broken system. So that's going to be another, you know, good piece of legislation as we move forward.
Well, that's huge as well. Well, I want to get back to the post-traumatic stress disorder. You know, one of the tragedies that's taken place around the country is that an officer will go in and go into his human resources, or, you know, the smaller agencies may not even have a human resource, but go to their administration and say, you know what, I'm having this issue. And then the agency will terminate them.
Right.
Or they'll put them on administrative leave. They'll take their gun and badge and put them on suspension. There's all kinds of activities that a police officer would not want to go and report this and get help because of the way they're treated. Does the legislation that you have put forth, does that protect the officers?
That it does, and that's one thing that we had written into the bill, is the fact that an agency cannot take any disciplinary action, whether it's punishment or refusal of promotion or anything to discourage or prohibit the officer's participation in these programs. So we actually had that written into the bill because that was our fear too of, okay, it's nice that we'll have these services available, but just to what you were talking about, we know what happens in reality when they go in. So we had that written into the bill that there cannot be any retaliation or anything to prohibit, you know, our members or our officers going in and seeking help.
That is absolutely critical. I mean, I know that, you know, it's going to take a while for these officers to even believe that that's the truth.
You know, oh, absolutely.
You know, you may pass the legislation, but you know the way that cops are, they're going to look at this with, shall we say, a jaundiced eye and go, I don't know if I believe this.
You're exactly right. You know how us cops are. I can probably send the bill to them and highlight that section. They probably still won't believe it.
Exactly. Well, let me ask you this. What's next? You guys you seem to be on the literally on the cutting edge of where workers' comp as related to law enforcement, first responders, needs to start taking its direction, as well as, you know, the creation of PTSD as a workers' compensation injury. What else are you working on in this regard?
You know, coming out of session, we're just trying to take a deep breath. But the one bill I was talking about on the work group, that's going to be a key component of examining and really drilling down into the weeds on workers' comp. And that's what I look forward to over the next year to probably 3 years of this work group, is really getting in there and identifying. And I think once we do that, we'll probably identify some other issues that we may want to come back to the legislature about.
Yeah, I understand that. That makes a great deal of sense. And that does sound like a tremendous opportunity here to make some serious changes. Now, if I understand your system down there, workers' comp, at this point, workers' comp is just workers' comp for everyone. There isn't a separation of first responders and, say, office workers. Is that correct?
Correct. And that's why these bills were so important, like with the liaison being provided, that now we've kind of carved out our first responders into a group that, you know, I truly believe they do need to be at the front of the line, you know, because when they get injured, they're out there protecting their communities or serving their communities. And as I would tell legislators, our first responders, they don't want to be on workers' comp. They want to get well and they want to get back to work. And,
yeah.
And so they don't want to be sitting at home. They want to get back to work. And so that's why it's important that, you know, these bills passed and hopefully they'll help.
I think that you guys are doing a tremendous job with that. Now, I understand there's also another pretty interesting bill that was passed, and that's concerning helping to save the lives of police officers by giving them protective equipment.
Yes, the legislature, and this really did come out of, you know, the tragic events of July 7th in Dallas last year. The lieutenant governor, he made a promise early on that we need to, he was appalled that when he found out that, you know, many officers don't have the level 4 vest, you know, because agencies, one, they may not provide it, they can't afford it. So the bill that passed this year is going to set back $25 million to purchase level 4 vests for over 50,000 officers in the state of Texas.
That's amazing.
You know, you just I know you're not going to see that anywhere else around the country either. So that is kind of groundbreaking in itself.
Is that so? 50,000 vests. That's the state of Texas has 50,000 police officers?
The number's going to be close to about 80,000 probably, that
wow.
75 to 80,000 range. And so, you know, so 50,000 vests, that'll go a long ways. And as soon as it passed, we're already getting calls here at the office, you know, how can we access that? Of course, since the bill's passed, it's going to be with the governor's office, and so they're going to have to set up the criteria and, you know, how agencies are going to apply for the funds and be able to purchase those vests.
Right, exactly. And will that kind of equipment be available to individual officers as well as, you know, buying them in bulk for PDs?
The way I believe it's going to work is it'll actually be the departments will have to be the ones to requisition for the vest. So it won't be 50,000 individual officers calling the governor's office. It'll be the agencies themselves, whether it's a county or a city agency. They'll be the ones to procure that.
Gotcha. Okay. So these are tremendous influences in the health and welfare of police officers all over the state of Texas. What else is going on in the state of Texas now? I know that that there has been some issue that has recently been brought up concerning the possibility of some of the Dallas police officers having been told that they weren't allowed to wear that level 4 equipment, even if they had it, and some were forced to return it to their cars during the day of the attack. And you know, if this is true, I know that you're looking into it as am I. What would the ramifications be towards the leadership of the Dallas PD if they actually did did something as reprehensible as that.
You know, I think, you know, that would just compound the tragedy if that's true, that, you know, you tell officers that the reason you can't wear that is because it looks too militaristic and you don't look like the military out there. That's going to be a tragedy in itself, and I hope that's not true. But as we spoke before we got on the air, I just learned of that late yesterday, and so we're doing some follow-up work here too.
You know, it's very reminiscent, unfortunately, of what's taken place in various communities. Baltimore is a perfect example. You know, how many police officers were injured? I think in one day, 71 officers were injured during the civil unrest and riots that took place, and they were literally forced to leave their equipment behind. As the same thing happened in several other communities up in the Northwest. So if this becomes a reality and police agencies don't take the welfare of their police officers over the political correctness that we have seen, almost on steroids, we have to do something as a profession to prevent this in the future. Would that be something that the police association would look at?
Oh, absolutely. That's what we're here to do. We're here to protect not only the rights of our officers, but their welfare too. And so whatever, challenges come forward, over the next couple of months or the year, we're always out there fighting for our men and women that fight that fight every day.
Are you seeing any trends, considering all of the negativity towards law enforcement that's been taking place over the last 4 or 5 years and was exacerbated by Black Lives Matter protests and the events of Ferguson, et cetera. Are you seeing a diminishment in retention of officers and recruitment?
Yes, we've seen over the last couple of years, we've seen the recruiting, all the agencies. You go to the Dallas area, Fort Worth is stealing officers from Dallas, due to pay issues there. But it's also, they can't, people don't want to go into law enforcement anymore. And, unfortunately, I have many friends that, they've been in law enforcement 10, 15, 20 years, and their families are even questioning them, going, don't you want to get out now? And it's pretty sad when you have an officer tell you that, their kid actually was like, "Dad, I really don't want you to be a police officer anymore." That's unsettling. And, we go back and talk about stress of the job anyway, but imagine going, you've had the stress of the job, and then you go home, and you have that stress from the family too. But yeah, we've seen it where it's affected recruiting, especially here.
I don't know how we're going to recover from this, because, it seems that some of the police agencies, in order to compensate for the lower recruiting, are lowering their standards.
We've seen that, and that in itself is going to will cause problems, down the road. That's the old saying we say all the time is kicking the can down the road, and that's what's going to happen. Is if you lower your standards, eventually you're going to have some problems.
You know, we've seen this historically. There have been a number of agencies that were tasked politically with diversity issues, and so they changed the testing procedures and the background requirements to make it easier to get the job. And when they did that, we saw some of the worst scandals in policing history result from that.
Yeah, I think we've seen on the recruiting end of it, I think we've kind of seen maybe turning the corner a little bit, where it's picking back up, but it's still down from where it was 3, 4, 5 years ago.
Now, all police agencies do their own recruiting. But is there an effort from your from your union to try and build up the profession, if you will, and kind of use the power of your organization to enhance the role of a police officer, as you know, as it's related to in the public, in order to push forward higher recruiting for everyone.
Yeah, that's one thing we've prided ourselves on as an organization, is we're always preaching professionalism, that policing is a profession. And so that's been one of our mantras, you know, always, is that this is a profession and it needs to be treated that way. And to be a true profession, you need to have high standards.
You know, one of the other part of the problem here is the difference in the pay scales. You can go to one agency, and you referred to it just a minute ago, that cops in Dallas are leaving in droves for higher paid jobs in the suburbs.
Exactly.
So if there doesn't become some type of uniform standard of salaries, then it's going to be a free for all out there.
It's a free for all now, and I don't know that we could ever get to the point of having the uniform standards. Believe it or not, I know men and women in this state that are working for $9 and $10 an hour as law enforcement officers.
$9 or $10 an hour.
$9 or $10 an hour. Their own federal assistance, of course, but they love the job. But that's where we're at, you know, all the way from that to, you know, Austin is one of the highest paid agencies in the state, along with some of the suburbs up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
You know, that's one of the things that is, I find really discomforting, because if you're not going to pay police officers in at least a living wage, then that leads to corruption issues. It leads to a lack of quality of employment. I mean, there's just so many ramifications to it, and I guess that we have not evolved as a profession enough, because there is such a diversity in the pay scale for law enforcement officers.
Yeah, you know, kind of a side note that kind of parallels this is, you know, we have, when it comes to workers' comp benefits, you have like Dallas, when they go out on workers' comp, they will make up the difference. Typically, workers' comp is about 75% of what you would be making. And so you have like Dallas, who they will make up that 25% difference, but that is rarely the case. So you can have officers in the same incident working for different agencies that they go out on workers' comp. One's getting 100%.
Is that something that you're also working on addressing?
Yes, that's one thing we're going to look at. We've already been talking to them about that portion of workers' comp and the disparity there. And so that, I think that's something we'll especially, I think, look at during in that work group.
That's great. That's great. Well, we're kind of running out of time, Mitch, and I want to thank you so much for coming on to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, and talking about some of the tremendous efforts and accomplishments that the Texas Municipal Police Officers Association has gotten on. It's something that every police officer in the nation should look at and try and emulate.
Absolutely. I appreciate your time, and just for your listeners, well, we're looking forward to having you at our conference at the end of this month and
I'm
speaking at our
to
banquet. Absolutely. We look forward to it. So that's right around the corner.
It sure is. Well, once again, Mitch, thanks so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. Have a great day.
I've got an incredible offer for you. It's a fantastic promotion for Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. We want you to have the opportunity to win $500 worth of gear from Warrior12.com. Now, Warrior12.com has the entire Blue Lives Matter product line. All right, that's every cool T-shirt you can imagine. And then there's cups, and there's mugs, and there's paracord bracelets. There's all kinds of stuff. You can see it all at Warrior12.com. But you can win it now. You can win every single item on there simply by going to BlueLivesRadio.com and entering. That's it. That's all you got to do. And this promotion is going to take place just within this month. So there's a really good shot of winning this. So all you have to do to win $500 worth of very cool Blue Lives gear is go to BlueLivesRadio.com and enter for free. Now, tell your friends about it, too, because we want as many people as possible getting the opportunity to get all of this cool gear. And I want you to tell your friends about Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. So, fantastic promotion, BlueLivesMatter.com, and enter to win for free.
End of watch.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay our respects to those men and women of law enforcement who have made the ultimate sacrifice and given their lives in the line of duty. Unfortunately, this week I have four names to read. The first is Correctional Officer Joe William Heddy Jr. of the Escambia County Department of Corrections in Florida. Correctional Officer Joe Heddy suffered a fatal heart attack at the Escambia County Road Prison in Cantonment, Florida, after struggling with an inmate at approximately 1 p.m. He responded to a cell in the South Wing dorm after an inmate tied a bedsheet around his own neck and was tightening it in an attempt to commit suicide. He called for assistance and began to struggle with the inmate in an attempt to remove the bedsheet. The inmate continued to resist until officers were able to remove the bedsheet and subdue him. Officer Heddy then packed up the inmate's belongings before calling for assistance on the radio and collapsing. Other officers initiated CPR but were unable to resuscitate him. He was transported to a local hospital where he was pronounced dead. Officer Heddy was a U.S. Army veteran. He had served with the Escambia County Department of Corrections for 8 years after having retired from the Federal Bureau of Prisons with 20 years of service. He survived by his wife, 3 children, 7 grandchildren. The second officer to die in the line of duty, Police Officer Miguel Moreno of the San Antonio Police Department in Texas. Police Officer Miguel Moreno was shot and killed as he and his partner attempted to contact 2 subjects near the intersection of Evergreen and Howard at approximately 3 p.m. The officers observed the men near a car that appeared to have been broken into. As they stopped to speak to the subjects, one of the men immediately opened fire with a revolver, striking Officer Moreno in the head and his partner in the torso. Despite his wounds, Officer Moreno's partner was able to pull him out of the line of fire and then return fire, wounding the suspect. The man then committed suicide. Second subject was taken into custody. Officer Moreno was transported to a local hospital where he succumbed to his wound the following morning. Officer Moreno had served with the San Antonio Police Department for 9 years. The third officer to die in the line of duty this week is Police Officer Robert Johnson of the North Hill Police Department in New York. Police Officer Bob Johnson was struck and killed by a vehicle on Route 30 south of High Rock Road at approximately 9:50 p.m. He had just gotten off duty and was driving home when he encountered the crash in which a deer was struck by another vehicle. Officer Johnson had retrieved his service weapon and was walking along the shoulder on the opposite side of the road to dispatch the deer when he was struck by a second vehicle. He was transported to the hospital where he succumbed to his injuries. Officer Johnson served as a part-time officer with the North Hill Police Department. After retiring from the Gloversville Police Department, he served in law enforcement for 33 years. His end of watch, Tuesday, July 4th, 2017. And the fourth law enforcement officer to die in the line of duty this week is New York City Police Officer Miosotis Familia. Police Officer Miosotis Familia was shot and killed from ambush as she sat in a marked mobile command post vehicle at the intersection of East 183rd and Morris in the Bronx. As she sat in the vehicle at approximately 12:30 a.m., a male approached and fired 1 shot through the window, striking Officer Familia in the head. Officers responding to the call of an officer down confronted the male subject fleeing the scene. The officers shot and killed the subject in an exchange of gunfire. Officer Familia has served in the New York City Police Department for 12 years, was assigned to the 46th Precinct, and she has survived by 3 children. her end of watch, Wednesday, July 5th, 2017. All of these officers served with distinction and honor and gave their lives and made the ultimate sacrifice for their communities. May they rest in peace. Hey, I want to thank you so much for tuning in this week to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. You know, we couldn't have done this without our sponsors. That is BlueLivesMatter.blue. That's the news and information website for Blue Lives Matter. JSD Protective Services, which is the best security company I know. And also Warrior 12. Warrior12.com is the clothing line and the merchandise line for Blue Lives Matter. They got the best t-shirts. They got these really cool things called Yeti cups. I just found out about them, and all kinds of other cool stuff. So go to warrior12.com and check out their stuff. Also, in case you didn't know it, I'm an author, and I've got a number of books. If you go to amazon.com, put my name in there, and you'll find all my books, including A Cop's Life, True Blue, and all my other stuff. So check it out, and thanks so much. I will see you. Well, I won't see you, but you'll hear me next week on Blue Lives Radio. Thanks.